Hey, I'm CJ, a millennial. You may know me from the podcast Science with Millennials. Well, you'd be correct, but this time we're coming at you with something other than science. We're going to be utilizing Rachel's forensic science degree and my psych knowledge to bring you a podcast that will be both thrilling and chilling.
If you haven't guessed from the title, we're going to be talking about true crime. I absolutely love learning about different true crime cases and have a plethora of knowledge pent up in my brain about cases I've read about, listened to, and watched on TV. So we're going to be utilizing my forensic chemistry degree as well as CJ's psych knowledge. As a reminder, CJ doesn't know what the case is before recording the episodes, so it's a mystery for you and her. Let's open today's case file and see what's in store. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. All right, welcome to True Crime with Millennials, friends. Today we're going to be talking about a very infamous person. I know you know the name because I've said it, but...
I honestly don't remember and I still don't know who it is.
So today we're going to talk about Eileen Wuornos. She's sometimes referred to as the world's first female serial killer, even though she really wasn't, but she was the first one to become popular, I guess. Or not popular, but like well-known. So, Wuornos was born on February 29th, 1956, in Rochester, Michigan, and she grew up in Troy, Michigan. Her father killed himself in prison. He was in prison for child molestation charges. Her mother left her and her brother Keith with their grandparents. Her grandmother was an alcoholic and grandfather was violent. She was sexually abused by her grandpa and had sex with her brother. By her early teen years, she was pregnant and gave the baby up for adoption. Wuornos was then kicked out and lived in the woods. As an adult, she hitchhiked and worked as a sex worker to survive.
Does it say where in the woods she was living? Just
in the woods. So, she did move down to Florida, but I'm not sure at what point.
Every urge in my being wants to go Flo-rida.
But, I mean, she clearly had a very traumatic childhood, and I'm sure that really has a, well, yeah, that can really have a serious impact on somebody's psyche.
Yeah, because things like that can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder, which is PTSD. Everyone is pretty common with that. And I just want to, like, sidebar and say that even if you didn't have these extreme of traumatic events, you can still have PTSD. It's not just, like... you have to be abused to have PTSD. There's even, like, the smallest thing, like a pet dying. You can have PTSD from that.
My mom said that only soldiers who fought in the war can have PTSD.
That's a common misconception. So, no, you are wrong. I have PTSD, and I never fought in the war.
Are you sure you didn't have a second or a first life where you fought in the war?
I mean, when we talked about something, armor plating, science with millennials, you did say that I wear chainmail, so maybe.
I mean, I've already kind of told you that she ends up killing people, multiple people, so PTSD can lead to, like, murderous intent, or...
Not necessarily. It depends on the type of PTSD that you have. Like, relating to what your mom was talking about with soldiers. They might have more tendencies to get violent with PTSD because they're having flashbacks of being in the war where they were being violent, such as, you know, using guns or having to manually hurt someone or things like that. So, with what we're assuming with her type of PTSD, it would be, like, she's having flashbacks and then also... with that type of abuse, you can also experience emotions such as fear, shame, humiliation, guilt, and self-blame, which can also lead to depression and anxiety as well. So kind of like the culmination of those things, she could be, depending on her victim, she could be taking out her own aggressions and guilt on other people. Like I said, I don't know who she's killing yet, so...
Yeah, so we'll get into more of that.
But, yeah, like things like that can really make people be... more violent because they feel a lack of control in their life when they are young. And believe it or not, a lot of things that happen in childhood affect your adulthood life as well. It doesn't just magically flip a switch and then everything that happens in your adulthood like affects your adulthood. Now, a lot of our behaviors start from childhood. They carry into adulthood. They just morph into more adult behaviors.
So in the mid-70s, Wuornos was arrested for assault and disorderly conduct. And after that, she met a wealthy yachtsman named Louis Fell and got married in 1976. Fell annulled the marriage after Wuornos was arrested again, so it didn't last long at all. Is having, like, short-term relationships like that a common symptom for someone with a lot of, like, mental health issues, like PTSD and stuff?
Not necessarily PTSD, but definitely with abuse. They're definitely, like, especially sexual abuse, they're more likely to have issues within relationships. And most of the time, it's that they're victimized by the person that they're with because they're more susceptible to believe them. And okay. More, like, they have a lot of issues with trust is one other thing, too. So, what did you say that she got arrested for?
The first time was assault and in the 70s, she was arrested for assault and disorderly conduct. The second one that Fell actually annulled the marriage after, I couldn't find what it was for.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, a decade later, Wuornos met Tyria Moore in Daytona, Florida, and they began to date. So, yeah, she's actually not straight, so... Not that that makes you murder people.
Is she?
She says she's a lesbian.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
So,
well, spoilers.
So, her first victim is named Richard Charles Mallory. He was 51 years old. His body was found on December 1st, 1989. He was wrapped, different sources said different things. Some say he was just under a piece of rug. Some said he was wrapped in a piece of rug. So he was found placed in, like, a junkyard under or wrapped in a piece of a rug with multiple bullet wounds to the chest.
Does she only kill men?
Yes.
And she was abused by a man?
Yes.
Okay.
Also... Richard Charles Mallory does have sexual assault charges against him in the past. So he was a known abuser.
Did she know him prior to this, or is that not?
No, he was a drawn. He picked her up on I-75 as a prostitute. And yeah, he was found a few miles from his abandoned car. His car was found in the woods in Ormond Beach, about 5 miles from where his body was found. Originally, this was the only crime that Wuornos admitted to and claimed that he was trying to rape her and that it was self-defense. He did have a history of sexual violence. He was convicted of rape in Maryland.
So if her part of the story is true, then she was just defending herself then, right?
Yeah, so she claims self-defense in this one.
Which, if he's trying to do that...
Well, technically she claims self-defense in all of them, but...
I don't know. I don't blame her, but...
This one I don't really have as much of a problem with. This guy sounds like a scumbag.
Yeah.
But not all of her victims were, like, scumbags. Some of them were reportedly, like, great people.
But we don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
True. The next victim was David Spears. He was found June 1st, 1990 in Citrus County. He was found naked and shot 6 times. He was 43 years old, a construction worker, and by all accounts, he was an honest, good person. He even ensured his ex-wife was financially secure. This guy, I mean... Like you said, you never know what goes on behind closed doors, but pretty much everyone in this guy's life, even the women in his life, have said he's, you know, a good dude, and just because you're going picking up prostitutes doesn't make you a bad dude.
So that's how he met her.
That's how pretty much all of her victims met her. She was a sex worker and picking up men, or being picked up by men on the street.
Do you think that she... killed all of her all of the people that were picking her up?
No.
I wonder why it's only specifically targeted men. Maybe it's like a personality thing. They mimic the personality of the abuser.
I'm not sure, or, you know, I mean, I think maybe it could be something like that, or even, like, you know, they do one thing and she kind of, like, has a flashback and, like, loses it and, like, feels like she's back in that situation with her abuser.
Right.
I'm not really sure. I definitely think that a lot of times this case just gets made to sound like, oh, well, you know, she had a bad background, but, like, she was a cold-blooded killer. But, like, there's so many more, like, mental health things that can go on in the background of this. And
was she diagnosed with any mental disorders or just...
I believe she was, but she was found competent to stand trial.
Well, you can have mental disorders and still be competent. I just wonder if she has, like, schizophrenia or anything like that.
Not that I know of. I don't believe she was ever diagnosed with anything like that. Okay, so we'll talk about the next victim, which is Charles Clarkson, who was 40 years old. He was found a few days after David Spears, and he was found in Pasco County. He was shot 9 times in the chest and stomach. Warnos originally claimed self-defense, but later admitted that it was in cold blood.
How old was the first victim?
51.
And then 43 and 40.
Mm-hmm. So do you think her mental health would make her potentially say that she did it in cold blood, even if it wasn't in cold blood? Or, like, maybe if she was having, like, a flashback or something and then came out of it, would she realize what she had done and been like, oh, like, I killed somebody?
You know, mental health has a lot to do with how someone acts, but you still have control over how you're acting for the most part, unless you have, like, called DID or dissociative identity disorder. So you basically switch into different personalities. But, you know, like a person with bipolar or PTSD or things like that, once you become conscious of, like, what you're doing, then you have more control over it, more emotional control. Because, like I said, I have it. So it's like when I'm having a flashback, it completely takes over what I'm thinking about or like my entire mental psyche. So it's like a movie going across the screen of, like, that's what's happening. And, like, when people are having PTSD flashbacks, they might, like if they're having a flashback to being strangled or strangling someone, they might start acting that out in real life. But it doesn't sound like she attacked her abuser in any way. She was just, like, a helpless child dealing with it. So can you tell me again how she killed the last person?
Shot 9 times in the chest and stomach. All of her victims were gunshot wounds.
So she's actively carrying a gun on her because she's a sex worker, right?
That makes sense. I assume for protection.
I don't know, because this sounds like, since she's already had 2 victims, the first 2 could have been sexual assault, but this person...
I will also tell you that she never really ever demonstrates any type of regret or, like, remorse for anything.
Okay, so now we're looking at more of sociopathic tendencies.
But she, like, when she went into court, she was kind of, like, would, like, goof off and, like, keep smiling at the judge all, like, loopily, is how they described it in the newspapers. So.
But she's regarded as competent?
Yeah, she was declared competent to stand trial.
So, leaning away from sociopathic tendencies, I would say more psychopathic. Because it sounds like she's lacking of a conscience at all, but just by how she's acting and not trying to, like, put on a show or feel, like you said, feel any more remorse at all for her actions. But the laughing thing could be, like, a trauma response. Because some people don't know how to handle conflict, so they laugh or cry or things like that.
Could killing people that resemble the person who abused you be considered a trauma response?
Yeah.
Also, her victims don't really look super similar.
Because psychopathic people see others as objects that they can use for their own benefit as well. But they're not always violent people.
So, can you explain the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath?
So a sociopath basically is someone that has, like, a conscious, like, we, you know, if we slap someone and it's not, like, out of anger or things like that, or even if it's out of anger, we regret it. You know, we would have that moral reminder that, hey, you're not supposed to hurt other people. But a psychopath would be like, they could slap you in the face, they could steal money from you or things like that, and they would have no remorse at all because they wouldn't have that guilty conscience. It's just like a, just think of like a little room that's like, hey, we like filing cabinets, and hey, we need to feel bad about these things. Like, this is one of the things that's not socially acceptable. You should feel bad about this. But the sociopath doesn't have those filing cabinets, and the room is just dark. There's no light on or anything. Nothing going on in there.
I used to always worry that I was a psychopath because I didn't experience feelings and stuff like everybody else, but turns out I just have autism.
Yeah, which if you have autism, that doesn't make you, or it doesn't automatically make you a psychopath. It's just you experience the world differently.
I always was like, well, I don't experience these feelings the same way everybody else does. Like, maybe I'm a psychopath. But it's not that I don't experience feelings. It's just not like how everybody else does. And sometimes it's a little inappropriately, but
I mean, and that's fine.
So I can show you like pictures of the victims. They don't look like, so this is her first victim. This is Richard Mallory, and then David Spears, Charles Carxedon, next one. Like, they don't look all that similar, you know?
No. It could just be it started off as assault, and then now she's...
She likes it?
She doesn't like assault, but...
No, I meant, like, if she killed the first time because the man was really assaulting her, and then she, like, realized she liked killing. Do you think somebody who has been kind of in a powerless, felt powerless their whole life could potentially like that powerfulness that would come with killing somebody?
Yeah, like taking their trauma out on men. Because like technically as a sex worker, she's in the position of power. She's providing a service. She is the one that can take or give that service, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I've never been a sex worker, but I assume that it probably happens fairly frequently where if you say no to something, men get angry because that's how they get. So.
And that's, of course, generalizing cisgender men.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, I understand that, like, technically they have the power, but, like, do they really?
I think it's just more of a mindset, like the feeling of being in power, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot to do with sex work is about female empowerment, like, especially now. It's becoming more...
Right, yeah.
Becoming more prevalent, like, that it's...
Okay.
Yeah.
And that it's, you know, empowering for women and not, like, something to be ashamed of.
So, like, she could have been technically, like, at the forefront of that kind of stuff, like, you know, female empowerment, but going about it where you're just, like, killing men that you're picking up, then they may have said something that may have triggered her, or she just was like, this is a guy that I can easily kill, you right. know?
The next victim is Troy Burness. He was 50 years old. Found in Marion County on August 4th, 1990. He was reported missing on July 31st, 1990. His body was already decomposing pretty bad when found, and he was found in a secluded area. He was also known to be very well-liked, hardworking, and respected. He was killed with 2 shots to the torso. So this also is something that I notice with these cases, is it doesn't appear like it's a ritual thing for her.
Right.
Because it's always a different number of shots. It's not like she has any specific, like, regimen or, like, ritual behaviors. She's, you know, she's just, like, going out and killing people.
It's also interesting, too, that she's using a gun because generally men use guns over right. women. Women are more blunt force trauma or poisoning.
Yeah, but I feel like in the situation that she is meeting these men, it's probably not very feasible to, like, poison them.
Yeah.
So.
But blunt force trauma would be feasible.
Yeah. But also, like, blunt force trauma is a lot more difficult if you're, like, in a car or, you know, we don't have the full range of motion.
Or using a knife. That's another common one
yeah.
for women.
I don't know, maybe, because one thing that is considered about gun, like, shooting crimes is that it's not very personal. So maybe she doesn't want to be associated with it. She wants to distance herself from the crime a little bit. Although if they really were, like, you know, rage-filled, I mean, I don't know, because to me it seems like she's driven by rage, but maybe not, because it's a very impersonal, non-rage way of killing someone with a gun.
It just doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like anger if she's laughing in the courtroom. She doesn't feel guilty about it at all. It could just be like a fun activity for her. Like, who can I?
This is her hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, yeah, I feel like, or like
hunting for sport, you know?
Yeah. I feel like I would, like, maybe the first one really was self-defense, but I feel like I would believe it more, well, not believe it more, but, like, I'd be more inclined to feel like these were all self-defense or, like, rage from her past trauma coming up if it was, like, a more personal crime, like a, like, physical attack instead of a very, because shooting someone with a gun is very impersonal. You don't even have to be near them to do it.
Right. See, these are things I don't know because I'm not a true crime person. So, like, I'm just going off of what I'm hearing, like, personality-wise or...
Yeah. So, yeah. Because shooting someone's considered to be a very, like, if you find someone that's stabbed and it's overkill, like, well, I guess it is overkill in some of them because she's shot people, like, 9 times. That's pretty overkill. A lot of times overkill can indicate rage and stuff like that. But usually with a lot of rage, you'll have, like, maiming of the bodies or, like, a much more up-close and personal type of weapon, like strangulation or, like, stabbing or something like that, instead of, you know, shooting someone.
And how is she disposing of the bodies?
Just leaving them places.
Yeah, so it's just reckless. She wanted to get caught then, it sounds like.
Yeah, she wasn't, like, I think the first one she kind of tried to hide in a junkyard under some stuff, but after that, I'm pretty sure she was just kind of leaving them in the woods.
Because that's where she was living?
No. At this point, she was, you know, kind of living on the streets. I'm assuming the woods were just the easiest place to dump bodies, where maybe they wouldn't be noticed as quickly.
So taking out any emotional trauma factors out of this. Kind of sounds like she was doing it because she could.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely get on board with the idea that the first one was, like, the first guy actually assaulted her and it was in self-defense. But, I don't know. The rest of them, like, the fact that she continued to do it and it just has never expressed any regret or feelings or anything like that. Just kind of makes me feel like it's not.
Yeah, it's almost like, okay, I got away with the first one. This helped me kind of, like,
find a new hobby.
Yeah, or, like, feel better about, like, my situation growing up. Not mine, but, like, her situation growing up.
Right. And
now it's, like, over and over again, it's like, okay, I keep getting to take out this aggression. Even if it's not, like, obviously she doesn't know these people, so it's just, like, I get to win, basically. Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about it. It kind of, to me, seems like... Because I thought it was interesting how when I was telling you about the first one, you were, like, totally on board. You were on her side. You were like, she was just assaulted and protecting herself. But then as we went on and talked about further victims, you kind of changed your mind. What caused that?
Because that's how studying the human mind works. It's not like we just, you know, I don't know. It's very different from chemistry. A plus B doesn't always equal C.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, just because someone's exhibiting signs of, like, sociopathic tendencies doesn't mean that they are a sociopath. They might just have sociopathic tendencies. And like you were saying, you related to, like, with autism, you related to those types of tendencies or psychopath tendencies because you didn't experience emotions in the same way. Which, if you were to present those symptoms without giving, like, more background, that might lead them to believe, you know, psychopathic tendencies. But at the same time, and, like, it's just, you need more context, which is why I've said, I think probably, like, 4 times now in the past the past couple of podcasts, but you need, like, what was this? Nonverbal behavior cues.
So, like, body language?
Yeah. That's a more normative way to put it.
I'm horrible at reading body language. Or, like, I'm horrible at reading, like, anything. Like, I never know when people have crushes on me or anything. I'm just, like, over here, like, la-di-da-di-da.
And the difference between that and a psychopath would be they might recognize it, but they're just not going to care.
Or they'll use it to manipulate someone.
Exactly. Right? Which, again, relates back to her being, you know, they want to be with her and spend time with her so she can use that against them. That's how she, like, traps them, almost.
I mean, they're literally would pay you money if you didn't murder them.
Maybe she gets the money first.
All right, so the next victim was Charles Dick Humphreys. Dick was the nickname. I hate when people nickname everybody Dick.
It's just like a boomer thing, I feel.
So he was a retired Air Force major and a police chief. He was a family man, well-respected. His body was found in Marion County on September 12th, 1990, with multiple gunshots to the torso and head. His car was later found in Suwanee County. So, you know, just another gunshot victim. Although this guy was a police chief, so I have some suspicions on how good of a man he really was, but, you know.
Yeah.
The next victim was Peter Seams. He was 65 years old. He left Florida for New Jersey in June 1990, and his car was found on July 4th, 1990 in Orange Springs. His body was never found, but witnesses saw two women by his car, and Wuornos actually denies killing this man.
Two women? Do you think her girlfriend was an accomplice?
I don't think so, because I think it's more likely that this victim either isn't involved, or that the witnesses were mistaken, or saw something else, because her girlfriend was, like, testified against her at trial. So I don't really think that she was involved, but...
Did she admit to killing the people that she did?
Yeah, she confessed to all of them except this guy.
Yeah, then I would have reasonable belief that she didn't kill this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why else she would admit to all of the other ones and not this one. Like, at that point, what do you have to lose?
Nothing.
But, I mean, she admitted to all the other ones, I guess, maybe because there was, like, significant proof against her, maybe. And then this one there wasn't, because there wasn't even a body, so she thought maybe she could get away with saying that he wasn't even dead or something like that.
Or it could be a pride thing.
Yeah.
Because it kind of seems like she's just leaving. I mean, we know that she's just leaving them, like, basically out in the open.
Oh, and like, she wants this guy to not be found?
Or, like, she didn't kill him, and, like, it seems like her mark is, like, leaving them out in the open to be found. So this would be really off-brand for her to...
Well, I mean, remember the first guy was hidden, and I don't think they've been left out in, like, super public places, but they weren't, like, as far as I know, they weren't, like, buried or anything like that.
See, that's why I go back and forth between sociopath and psychopath, because the first one she tried to hide, so that means that she did have some feelings that were, like, guilty about it, but then...
Or she just didn't want to get caught.
Yeah.
So when we talk about serial killers, you know, there's disorganized and organized killers. She definitely seems like a disorganized killer to me. She's not really planning her murders at all. She's just kind of, like, going with it. And when she gets the urge to kill, she kills and just kind of dumps the body.
That's why it leads me away from her killing that guy. Was it the police chief? But they didn't find the body?
No, this is Peter Seams. Dick was the police chief.
Yeah, so that's why it kind of leads me away from it, because it seems like she's almost leaving it like a trophy or something, like, hey, I killed this person. And she's openly admitting to killing the others, but if she did kill that person, then you probably would have found the body.
Do you think that I mean, also, well, this is also in Florida, so, like, a freaking alligator could have eaten the body or something.
True.
Do you think that someone with past trauma, like Wuornos, would be more susceptible to being pressured into making a false confession?
But you said she was laughing and, like...
I mean, in the courtroom, she, like, was smiling at the judge. Weirdly, apparently.
Yeah.
But that was from, like, the news reporters. Like, people will call anything weird when it's associated with a serial killer, even if it's not weird. Like, I was listening to a podcast recently, and they were like, oh, he believed in Satan and killed his parents and then himself because he played Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh my god.
And I'm like, if that's true, I'm going to be a mass murderer because I play so much Dungeons and Dragons.
I don't know, she could have been coerced into it, but it sounds like, from the way it sounds to me, it's like, those were, like, her trophies, you know? Like, look what I did. Like, attention-seeking behaviors.
Okay.
Just because she, like, admitted to all of them. And, like, generally if you're coerced, you're kind of, like, nervous and, like, not, like... They are acting like she's, like, loony when she's in the courtroom. Like, I'm just imagining, like, someone, like... creepily smiling and stuff.
Well, we can pull up some footage of her in the courtroom before we end, and we'll watch it, and then you can give your thoughts about it.
Okay. To me, it sounds like she wasn't coerced into answering, but she was strictly stating, I didn't kill this one person, and probably was not lying about it, because it doesn't have her typical, like, and yeah, think of Florida with alligators and stuff, but I don't know. We'll have to look into, alligators eat humans like what?
They can.
Okay. Well, I am never moving to Florida.
Well, I mean, they're less likely to eat you if you're alive. Like, if you throw, like, a dead body in the swamps of Florida.
Where was she disposing of the bodies before that?
Just, it seems like she's just disposing of it wherever is convenient. Just dropping them in the woods somewhere.
And where did they find his car?
They found his car in... Orange Springs, which was part of one of the areas she was active in, because one of her other victims was found in Orange Springs. Or no, sorry, Citrus County? They all sound the same. Florida, what are you doing out here?
Oranges. Okay, so Orange Springs is right next to a forest.
You'd be surprised how hard it is to find people. Like, unless the body's, like, laying on a suburban street or something, like, bodies can just disappear. Like, animals tear them into pieces and carry them off. Some animals will even, like, drag the bones to their, like, into, like, their burrows and stuff.
So she just straight up said, I didn't kill this guy.
Yeah, she never admitted to killing this guy.
I just don't see why she would lie and say she didn't kill him if she's openly admitting to the other ones.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that she feels that they're not going to be able to, like, ever say it's her. But at the same time, I don't know. To me, it seems like... Not that she is not, like, an intelligent person, I guess, but these killings don't seem super intelligent. Like, she's not out here planning, like, the perfect murder. She's probably not, like, oh, well, they can't prove that I did this one, and they can prove that I did these, so I might as well get out in front of it and say I did these, but I'm not gonna say I did that one, and I don't
know. Yeah, that's how it seems to me, too. And, like, not saying she's not smart, it's just, like, it's not calculated.
Right. Her final victim was Walter Antonio. He was 62 years old. He was found November 19th, 1990, partially naked in a, like, secluded area. He had 4 gunshot wounds to his back and head, and his car was found 5 days later in Brevard County. He was a reserve police officer. So this one, I kind of wonder what happened differently with this one, because this is the only one she shot in the back.
Reserve? What is that?
A reserve police officer?
Yeah.
They're, like, not, like, volunteer police officers, but, like, they're not full police officers. They're called in if there's, like, a major incident or something like that. But they have, like, a normal day job, usually.
What? Like, where was he naked?
It didn't say. It just said partially naked.
Did they say where he was killed? Like, in his house? Outside?
He was found in a, like, secluded part of the woods. But, yeah, so I just... This one seems different to me because he was shot in the back, but, I mean, this one to me really cements the fact that these weren't self-defense.
Right, yeah.
You're not shooting someone in the back in self-defense.
I, when shooting in the torso and then the stomach, it almost sounds like she wanted them to suffer.
Yeah, I mean, gut shots definitely suck. Not that I've ever been shot, but, like, I've heard that they suck. Oh, so this other source says he's completely nude, so... You decide, I guess, if he was partially naked or fully naked. But he was found on a logging road in Dixie County, and he was 60 years old. He was a trucker, a sometime security guard, and a member of the reserve police. He had been shot 4 times with a .22 caliber weapon. When he was found on November 19th, he'd been dead less than 24 hours. His car was found 5 days later across the state in Brevard County.
So she either killed him there or took his body there.
Yeah. The Captain Steve Beingar was the commander of the Marion County Sheriff's Criminal Investigation Division. And he knew about the killings in the other counties as well. And he couldn't let it go. He suspected... Oh, the reason the two women were spotted in the other... one where they didn't find the body is because they had crashed his car. So they were seen, like, walking near the crashed car. But he couldn't let it go. He thought it was all one person or two people. And, yeah. What's your thoughts?
It's interesting that she shot them in the back of the head rather in the front, because generally that would mean that, like, when it was in the front, they were facing her, they could see her and were talking to her. Or we assume that they were having a conversation of some sort, and they were, the victim was maybe pleading or something like that for their life or whatever. But this is like, and I wonder why he's naked. Like, I wonder if she got him to that point of, like, vulnerability, or she just, like, didn't want her DNA to be on him, like, any hair samples or anything like that. And I also wonder if she took him across the state and dumped his body and then drove his car back there, or if she killed him in the woods and then drove his car back there and then just, like, left the car there.
So I was incorrect. Her girlfriend was involved in it. Her girlfriend, they decided to have Eileen start to rob her Johns and kill them and steal their cars.
What are Johns?
Men who pick up prostitutes, that's what they call them.
Okay.
They sold some stolen items at Florida pawn shops, which then led the Volusia County police to kind of check that out, and they found Wernos's thumbprint on one of the receipts from the pawn shop. So in 1974, Wernos was imprisoned for driving while intoxicated and firing a gun from a moving vehicle. That's something normal people do.
Like some Bonnie and Clyde stuff.
Do you think, like, I don't know. To me, it doesn't sound like a psychotic break. It just sounds like she's killing them in cold blood. But, like, what's your opinions?
It's almost like she's trying to get revenge.
Yeah.
Because they're in a certain, they're from 40 to 60 years old.
Right.
Which would have been, like, grandparent age when she was growing up.
Right. So, she was also arrested for armed robbery, check forgery, and auto theft. She was arrested in early 1991 and admitted to the killings, but claimed that she acted in self-defense after the men assaulted her. Supporters of her viewed her as a strong, independent woman and even as a heroic figure for defending herself against male aggression. In 1992, she was convicted of one of the murders and sentenced to death. She then pled guilty to 3 more of the murders and admitted that she had killed for profit and not in self-defense. She was executed by lethal injection on October 9th, 2002 in Stark, Florida. What?
I can see where the supporters are coming from.
Yeah, I agree.
I can definitely see that, but it sounds like they just created a false narrative of what she was doing to try and...
But, so, I mean, what's your perspective? Do you think that her traumatic past caused this, or do you think she was kind of always destined to be a killer?
It can be 50-50.
To put it in a very dramatic way.
I would just put it as... I think that, to me, she found something that makes her feel good, makes her feel empowered, makes her feel better about what happened to her, and then just went with it. And then she was going to be sentenced to death anyway, so why not admit to the rest of them?
But she still didn't ever admit to that one, which is weird.
Which I don't think she did that one.
Do you think that she could have been helped by, like, treatment at all? Like, by, like, mental health treatment at all?
If she was offered that, or, you know, we have a severe mental health crisis in America where we don't have enough available resources that are affordable for people that can't afford it, or it's not, like, easily accessible. Like, I had a little bit of a trigger warning. I am in a class where we talk about, it's counseling skills, but we talk about recognizing suicide signs. And this is segueing into what I'm talking about with the mental health crisis. But anyway, in the Rocky Mountain region, there is a lot higher rate of suicide than there is in the rest of Colorado. But Colorado is actually, like, I think it's a couple years ago, it was known as the 10th most, like, suicidal state out of America, which is high, obviously. And it's mostly because people were isolated, and it's mostly men that were isolated in the Rocky Mountain area. That the reasoning is that they had more access to guns, they didn't have much access to mental health care, and they were more isolated. Even if they lived in a more populous area, they're still small mountain towns, so it's not like they could just, like, have, like, a plethora of psychologists or psychiatrists or anything like that to help with mental health care. And with her living in the woods, that's isolation, which can also cause, like, madness or, like, a psychotic break. Especially since she was thrown out there at such a young age.
Do you think that to really help her and, like, potentially prevent these crimes, that mental health would have had to, like, intervene prior to her killing the first victim? Or do you think that, was she beyond saving after she killed? Or do you think that she could have potentially been, like, rehabilitated?
I don't believe anyone's beyond saving, because that's, you know, even if someone is a serial killer, I mean, yeah, they're never going to go back to being, like, normal, quote-unquote, but they definitely can help to, like, rectify their behaviors, which is, like, what the prison system tries to do is, like, prison reform and, like, get them to, like, think about the consequences of their actions and, like, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Again, our prison system in America is awful and doesn't actually work.
It doesn't meet any of the actual criteria to be a deterrent, and neither does the death penalty.
Exactly.
I'll fight you about it.
You know, I think that there's a chance that things could have been changed in her life. It doesn't necessarily mean she's going to be taken off that path, but, like, it could have...
Like, do you think after she was, like, arrested for this, she could have potentially gotten to a point where she wouldn't have killed anymore, or wouldn't have felt the need to kill anymore?
I don't think the arrest would really have an effect on her.
I meant, like, if she received mental health treatment.
Oh.
But, like, after she's already killed, like, a bunch of people.
Potentially, she could just still have those tendencies, but if anything, it sounds like she's confident enough to stand on trial to say what she did, because she could admit that she did it, but it doesn't sound like she was emotionally all there. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't sound like crimes of passion. It sounds like someone who is traumatized as a child and is now finding a way to take it out on someone else. Instead of, like, you know,
dealing kids, with your feelings.
Yeah, dealing with your feelings, or, like, kids growing up where they pop the heads off of Barbie dolls or, like, light them on fire or, like, things like that. She's, like, taking it to a new extreme of, like, that version of trying to take out your trauma on things.
What do you think we can do better and learn from this to help try to avoid something like this happening in the future? Like, what systems need to be implemented in our country?
So first thing is, when it comes to starting in, like, a younger age, like, we have all these school shootings and stuff, but it's because these signs and symptoms of anger and depression and anxiety and all of this other stuff goes unnoticed, they're just known, like, a lot of times it's the quiet kid that did it, you know, and they're, like, unexpected. But to change it, I definitely think that, like, with police, you know, they need to be more educated on mental health. Like, a lot of issues I've seen arise are people with mental health issues, and then the police automatically jump to, I'm going to draw my gun or a taser or something like that, instead of recognizing the signs. When it comes to, like, being at a younger age, then, you know, school counselors are supposed to be there for the kids. There's too many kids for how many school counselors there are. I think there was, like, probably 400 kids, and we had 2 school counselors.
Yeah. I also wonder, like, I feel like the, I mean, not that I'm excusing what she did. Obviously, taking somebody's life is a huge deal, and it's not, like, you can't just blame that on, you know, having a traumatic childhood. Lots of us have had traumatic childhoods, and we're not all out here killing people.
Right.
But at the same time, I do feel like the system just failed her on every level. Like, her father was literally in jail for child abuse, or for child molestation. Like, I feel like at that time, she probably should have been, it should have been identified that she needed assist, like, that she needed help. And then her mother left her and her brother, and, you know, she was, you know, being abused and sexually assaulted, and even, like, having sex with her own brother. Like, I feel like that kind of trauma would have signs, and, like, the teachers hopefully should have been able to notice something, and, like, I feel like it shouldn't have just gone unnoticed. She shouldn't have been able to go under the radar that much and never really receive any help.
That is mental health, though, unfortunately. I mean, I want to say it was the 70s or whatever and blame it on that, but it hasn't changed.
Right.
It absolutely has not changed.
All right. So we're going to pause the recording now, and I'm going to show Cody a video of Eileen Wuornos to give her an idea of, like, her mannerisms and behavior, and then we'll come back and chat about it.
BRB.
Hi, guys. It's CJ from True Crime with Millennials. If you are wanting to support us more than just listening, be sure to give us all the stars that you can on any platform. That really helps spread the word about our podcast, as well as checking us out on social media. You can find us on Instagram at True Crime with Millennials. We're also on Facebook, which is True Crime with Millennials. You can also go on Anchor and tip us, which would be great. It helps support the podcast for the future, and we will be introducing merch soon. So be looking forward to that. And yeah, make sure to share our podcast with friends and family as well. And don't forget about Science with Millennials. We have that podcast as well, and that comes out every Wednesday. This podcast comes out every Friday. Thanks for listening.
All right, so now that we watched the video, we'll link the video in the show notes. But now that we've watched it, what's your opinion?
I don't think she has remorse for her actions. I think that she has justified them as being something that was absolutely necessary to do. I don't think she's lying about anything, you know? I think she's just being straight. I mean, some of the things that she was saying about, like, the police dropping in and, like, coming and following her and stuff like that could just be paranoia behavior. But again, we don't have proof of it. We don't know what the government does. We don't know any of that kind of stuff. So it kind of looks like, from how they were in the video, they were painting her as being a villain, where she was trying to paint herself as being, like, a...
I want to know what your thoughts are about her comparing herself to Jesus.
I think they're painting her as a villain, and she's calling herself a vigilante. She's comparing herself to Jesus.
Yeah, she did. She said that she was being, like, persecuted, and now she knows how Jesus feels. Or Jesus felt, because she's going to be, like, crucified like Jesus was.
She just feels like she's been being wrongfully killed. Like, what she was doing is right, and that she shouldn't be killed for it.
Do you think that she's been able to rationalize that due to some mental illness or because of her past trauma or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both.
Do you think that she has always had, like, mental illness, or that her mental illness was specifically caused by her trauma?
No, I think she's always had mental illness of some sort, because she's showing paranoia symptoms, which the talking about the police dropping in and surveilling her before she even started killing her, it's those point to schizophrenia symptoms. How old was she when she started doing this stuff?
She was like in her 40s.
I'm going to read you some of the symptoms of schizophrenia.
Okay.
So there are positive feelings and negative, or positive symptoms and negative symptoms. Positive symptoms are, they add feelings and behaviors that are not usually present, such as delusions, like believing you have special powers or thinking that people are out to get you. Hallucinations, like hearing, seeing, feeling, or smelling things that others do not experience. And disorganized thinking, speech, and behavior. So those are just some of the lists. And then negative symptoms, reduced feelings or behaviors that are usually present, such as lack of emotion and avoiding family and friends. Loss of interest in or ability to do daily tasks. Difficulty with speech or carrying on a conversation. Again, not a complete list of symptoms.
I do like that. I do like her ideas about the about after you die, that you're just going to be beamed up and like go explore another universe. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Again, I can't diagnose. I'm just saying like there's different factors that figure in that point to different signs of mental illnesses. Like PTSD definitely is a probability. Anxiety disorder, I don't think so, but I don't know.
I mean, so to me, in that video, she seems very angry and, well, like, yeah. not self-righteous, that's not the word I'm looking for, but, like, she feels like she's doing the right thing, like, she's protecting the world and saving the world. And how much do you think of that? Because remember, this video is the day before she was executed. How much of that do you think is just due to the fact that she knows she's going to die the next day? I mean, most of us don't know the exact date we're going to die. Like, even if you're chronically ill, you don't have a date. Like, you're not like, oh, I'm going to die tomorrow. I assume that puts a lot of stress on mental health, for sure.
I think that she just was like, hey, this isn't me that they're painting me as. This is who I am. I'm dying tomorrow, so it doesn't matter. This is what I did. This is why I did it. This is how I want my name to go down in history. So, like, whether her depiction of herself is correct or not, she's trying to paint herself as, like, being a savior. And, like, this is something she needed to do to make the world better. She's protecting other people from those men that could have hurt other women.
Also, I did want to point out that she never really necessarily admitted to killing the one man, but she did in this, like, video. He said, you killed 7 men. And she said, yes, I did. So 7 would include that one guy. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of like...
Yeah, she could have and just not admitted to it. Or there might be a person that she killed that they didn't find.
I'm wondering if maybe she just didn't really notice that he said 7 instead of 6, or...
She seemed pretty enraged, so that could be it,
too. Yeah.
I mean, I would be enraged, too, if I were dying the next day and, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I had this mindset that I was doing the right thing and then I'm
gonna be killed for it. To me, that video almost seems like someone that has resigned to the fact that they're dying the next day and just kind of is like, you know what? They think I'm crazy. I'm gonna show them how crazy I can be. And just was kind of like, I'm just gonna give this interview and be angry and talk about all the things and...
I don't know, because what I heard from it was that she was feeling like every time she met with an authority figure, bad things started happening more so. Like, she was saying something about supersonic sound.
Yeah, what do you think about that part where she said that they were torturing her in her cell using, like, sonic pressure, I think is what she called it, or something like that?
That just points to, like, the hallucinations, like I was talking about with schizophrenia. Like, when people with schizophrenia feel like they're under attack or, like, a severe amount of stress, they tend to have more hallucinations, more intense hallucinations. I'll show you the video after. There's a sensory video that shows you like what it's like to experience schizophrenia, which I can also put in the description as well. There's 2 videos. One is more intense than the other one, so I'll put a like trigger warning for the one that's more intense. But it gives you an idea of what people with schizophrenia go through. So it's not always like at all times they're having like symptoms, but like sometimes it can come out in ways that you wouldn't expect, like her potentially hallucinating that they were doing something, or like that's why it points me towards like they were surveilling her and they were picking up in a helicopter and all this other stuff. It's like
Is that usually
not normally something that you would have done? Or?
So is it always like triggered by stress, or not necessarily, but stress can be a major trigger? Or
in men, schizophrenia symptoms typically start in the early to mid-20s, and women's symptoms typically begin in the late 20s. It is uncommon for children to be diagnosed with schizophrenia and rare for those older than age 45. So what the exact causes of schizophrenia are unknown. Research suggests that it could be a combination of physical, genetic, psychological, and environmental factors. So also, some people may be more prone to it, and because of stressful or emotional life event that might trigger it as well, like a psychotic episode. So that could relate back to the abuse that she was facing, and then potentially being abused in that situation could lead towards that. So I'm going to read you like a little bit of the symptoms that they can experience outside of what I told you before. Behavioral symptoms can be social isolation, disorganized behavior, aggression, agitation, compulsive behavior, excitability, hostility, repetitive movements, self-harm, or lack of restraint. Again.
So what causes schizophrenia?
It is unknown.
Okay, so we don't know if it's like hereditary, or is it hereditary?
It's a combination of genetics, brain chemistry, and environmental contributions.
Okay.
So nature versus nurture.
Somewhere in the middle.
Chemical makeup, and then your genetics from your parents. But cognitively, it can also cause thought disorder, delusion, amnesia, belief that an ordinary event has special and personal meaning, belief that thoughts aren't one's own, disorientation, mental confusion, slowness in activity, or false belief of superiority. Which we all know, our friend here is under the assumption that they are comparable to
Jesus.
Yes. So mood, we have anger, anxiety, apathy, feeling detached from self, general discontent, loss of interest or pleasure in activities, elevated mood, or inappropriate emotional response. One big thing about people with schizophrenia is that they may laugh at inappropriate times, or they may have, like it says, inappropriate emotional response to things, like they might start laughing at a funeral, or things like that. Psychological hallucinations.
Is that because they are... So, I don't... I mean, I guess I'll have to wait until we watch the video that you were talking about, but I don't really... So, I guess all I really know about schizophrenia is that it's, like, hearing voices, but I'm sure it's not just that. Like, is that what would cause them to, like, laugh at a funeral, or is it just...
It wouldn't be, like, them telling a joke, like, a voice telling them a joke or something. It's more like they're seeing the situation from a distorted point of view, and that's how they react to it. Like, I was saying, like, how, you know, sometimes when people are crying, people will laugh. Because they're uncomfortable, they don't know how to react to the situation. Could be similar to that.
Okay.
It's not necessary. Like, the voices, I can show you another YouTube channel of this girl that I follow that has schizophrenia, and she has, like, three different people talking to her in her head, and she can name them, they all have personalities, but it's different than DID because they aren't, she's not shifting.
She's not them.
Yeah.
They're
separate entities.
Separate, yeah.
But yeah.
Isn't it debated on if DID is even a legitimate thing?
It was multiple personality disorder that they were.
Oh, okay.
And then they decided to change the name to dissociative identity disorder.
But it's pretty rare, right?
It's not as rare as you think. It's rare for people to be open about it, aside from like a partner or a close friend or family member, but...
All right, well, I guess that wraps up our...
It's rare. It's less than 200. It's rare in the United States. Less than 200,000 cases per year.
Okay.
But it's still not, like, it's more common than you would, it's not like 500 people.
Right.
You know.
Do you have any other comments, anything about this case?
I'm not, like, officially saying she has schizophrenia disorder. She's just showing symptoms of it. I think that she has a very, like, strict mindset that she needs to do what she thinks is right, and that's how she should handle it, and doesn't want to be the victim anymore in situations where someone is taking control of her.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm not going to say that I agree with her actions, but I understand.
Yeah. I definitely lean towards the first one actually being in self-defense, because he already had a history of rape and sexual assault, and was literally convicted of it, so, you know, it wouldn't be a shocker if he tried to assault her, and that kind of set her off on this whole thing.
Yeah, it could have, like, you know, that was her job, so it couldn't have made her panic when there was even close to that being kind of a situation.
So, anyway, that's it for today's episode of True Crime with Millennials. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure you give us 5 stars on whatever platform, or as many stars as you can on whatever platform you're listening to. You can also check us out on Instagram at
True Crime with Millennials.
And you can also check us out on Anchor, where you'll be able to tip us if you would like. And thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time.
Stay classy.